Welcome to Grails, a podcast by Alton Insights. My name's John Tunger, and on this episode, we are joined by Rob Petrozzo himself, founder and chief product officer of Rally. We'll be breaking down what happened behind the scenes at Rally this last year. We'll look forward into the rest of 2022, talk about different assets, directions.com that's hitting the marketplace this Friday. Just a ton of great stuff in this episode. I think you're really going to enjoy it. Let's get started. Rob, it has been, just about a year. You were guest number one, official friend of the show. Huge to have you back on the podcast. I mean, so much has happened in the last year. We have a lot to catch up on what's going on under the hood at Rally.
Yeah, it always feels important to be like friend of the show. It feels like that's official, you know what I mean? But sincerely appreciate you having me back on, man. A lot's happened for you guys in the last year, so it's awesome to see it develop.
Yeah, I mean, even when I first hopped on talking about the space with you, it's like, man, where do you think this is going to grow? I felt like it was like in its infancy, and just so much has happened in the year. I mean, you guys are dishing out new assets all over the place. You just have a domain that just, directions.com. Like we were just dreaming about that stuff last time we talked. What has been the thing that's been running your team crazy right now? Like what are you guys working on fresh under the hood?
I think it's one of the things where we're always working, we're always trying to develop experience. I think that, at a high level, assets and moving into all these different categories. And now we're at, 19 categories. And I think that we always started early on with this really wide aperture with the idea that, we grow into all these different spaces and take that journey with the investors. I think to some, it kind of didn't seem that way early on. We were literally called Rally Road. And, there was a bunch of car offerings, but, we had every conversation that we could around every asset class in 2016, 2017, and started the work on all of those assets so early. So to start to see it come to fruition and do that in tandem with all the other initiatives we have, whether it's new museum or launching new asset classes and some of the merch and the experiences that go around it, or starting to think about, what the future of this platform looks like and other alternative platforms, which have grown in demand and in popularity so much over the last 2 years. I think now it's really executing on the stuff that we've been thinking about and talking about for the better part of 5 years. And that's just like what the everyday is trying to create that experience for the investors.
Yeah. Yeah. So, in the spirit of it being early on in the year, let's do some kind of like New Year's type questions, right? I mean, what was the most surprising thing from this last year for you, whether come to the space or Rally? What was the most surprising thing?
I think all of it was the way that, I mean, it's hard to not talk about NFTs, but I think that the way they've proliferated this space and the way they've kind of popped up in such a way that people who have a lot of domain expertise and all these individual asset classes, whether it's cars or cards or it's, vintage luxury, all the things that we've always paid attention to, they moved really quickly into wanting to understand and wanting to be a part of the NFT ecosystem. And I think that we've always looked at new asset classes that we go into. We don't want to ever follow trends or try and jump into something without having that domain expertise. I think the amount of information that came with all these tokens and with all these NFTs and the creators and the projects and the sort of motivations behind it happened so quickly that, we kind of thought about this the same way that we thought about every other asset class we went into, but it was like supercharged. And everybody here was so excited to learn more, and the abundance of information made it possible for us to jump into that space really quickly. And the way it's taken off on our platform and other platforms, it's impossible to not recognize that as like a real transformational moment that happened over the course of 2021.
Yeah. What was that moment like where you're like, wow, I mean, I could totally see this buying a dinosaur bone, but yeah, okay, we'll spend a couple $100,000 on this CryptoPunk. Like, I mean, was that just, were you like, are we out of our minds? What was going through your head in that moment?
No, I mean, when we started thinking about this, like when Top Shot really took off, which feels like forever ago now, but it's like a year.
That was 3 years ago, dude. I don't even know what you're saying.
But like that team is so smart. And what they did was so smart. I think we might have talked about this the first time around. It was like right when it was starting to pop off. But they really opened up to the masses, and they did it in a way where we were paying attention to gaming and to tokens that were being sold within games, and we were paying attention to Top Shot, obviously. But when it really hit that sort of mass adoption right after that first big wave of Top Shot and these moments are being sold for $100,000, that was the most exciting part for me. I think that NFTs in general, this weird space now where some people get it, some people don't, but you can't not pay attention to it. And I think that you know, artists and creators have been getting robbed forever. And I've had that happen to me with projects and designs that I poured my whole heart into and thought that would be like a jumping off point in my career. And then, like, you know, this big brand steals it from you. And then it's something that you don't really get the credit for it. And I think all designers have kind of been through that. So to see creators come out, and whether it's the Damien Hirst of the world or even with CryptoPunks, it was such an early project and it was done by some really, a really, really smart team, and see it reach critical mass and kind of see it reach these masses where people really care about it as art or the utility behind it. It felt like a long time coming, but seeing all that kind of explode right after Top Shot really had its moment was this encouraging thing as a creator and a designer to see like the great stuff become those blue chip pieces, even the ones that have been around since 2017. So to me, it wasn't super surprising to see those prices. It got more surprising as you saw some of the people that were in these ancillary spaces really gravitate towards it quickly. And that polarization happened almost immediately too, where like a whole group of people said, this is a joke, it'll never work. Then this other group of really smart people are saying, you don't get it. And seeing all that develop over the year has been crazy. It happened so fast.
Well, and that element, I think, is what's been blowing my mind. Like it almost feels like you're over here, you guys start a rally, you really kind of paved the way for taking these assets and fractionalizing them, like, you know, collectibles and that stuff. And then all of a sudden it feels like people almost jumped to digital collectibles. And all of a sudden that's being talked about more, like these galaxy brain ideas are being talked about more than like the Declaration of Independence. And I'm like, guys, what, how did we go from this? And like, this almost seems so much more clear cut. Like, it's interesting to hear that you were encouraged by that. Cause if I was you, I feel like I'd have been pulling my hair out a little bit.
No, you know what it is? When we started this, it was, and I don't want to pat us on the back too much, but I feel like we were pioneers in this space in such a way that you had no choice but to kind of copy our model and literally copy the SEC documentation if you wanted to have a platform that was fractional like rallies. And what happened was it took 3 or 4 years for that to really click with people. So for us, you know, and for me personally to see it move so quickly, it's one of those things where we always want to be with the crowd and go in the direction they want to go in. When we started putting NFTs on Rally, we wanted to find the blue chip stuff. But we saw that when someone makes their first investment on Rally in an NFT, they're not necessarily making their second investment in more NFTs. They get that diversification. They find other stuff really quickly that's tangible. So whereas we brought a lot of people from tangible asset investing into NFTs on Rally, we saw the reverse as well, where a lot of new users, maybe a little bit younger, maybe their, you know, risk tolerance is a little bit different and they jumped into NFTs early by buying and selling on OpenSea or wherever. They found their way to Rally and then were able to find that shared DNA and things like a Mickey Mantle card or, you know, a Birkin bag or these elements of, you know, luxury and blue chip assets in their own right outside of just a digital space. And that for us has always been like, you know, a really important part of securitizing assets on Rally, where, you know, shiny things get chased, like 99% of those aren't worth, you know, 1% of the time and effort you put into it. But we're trying to find those asset classes that evoke that emotion and that we believe are here for the long term. And there are a lot of NFTs that fit that criteria, even though there feels like there's so much, and so much of it that goes to the market will never be worth the same as some of the blue chip tangible assets that people are investing in on Rally.
Right. Kind of feels like it kind of ties in with this. Last time we talked, you know, we asked the annoying, like, hey, the what inning is this question? but I'm curious from your perspective, right? I mean, like, in this year, did we go from like a first inning to a third type inning thing? Or like, do you feel like this is just, it's still such a small world? Where are you kind of seeing in terms of like how the industry's grown, where it's at?
Yeah, I would have said, if you would have asked me that maybe 6 months ago, I might have said we're in the second inning, but now it feels like there's 1,000 innings in the game. Like, it's not a regular, the finish line got moved back so far. And a lot of that comes with appetite for investment from this new class of investor who, I think they see opportunity in a way that even my generation didn't. We saw opportunity in diversification coming from in the form of ETFs and maybe options. But now what we've been trying to preach since day one is that there's a chance for everything to be an investment worthy asset class if enough people care about it and if the values of it are following that scarcity and that momentum and they become something that works its way into a portfolio. Right. I think now we're starting to see that actually happen. So the amount of innings that are in this actual game is something that is very hard to predict right now. So it's hard to predict where we're going or what inning we're in.
Right. I mean, what's cool, like, you guys announced directions.com, right, coming out this Friday, and people don't really bat, like, it's not like a surprise. It's like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Wow, that's smart. I'm glad they did that. Where maybe a year ago, it would have been like, wait, what? You know, and it's like, oh yeah, cool. That's a really smart idea. I feel like that's like a really cool development, even just that shows how far we've come in a year.
Yeah. And I think that people are starting to realize that like a domain name might not be that different than a baseball card. It might not be that different than a watch. It's one of those things where if you find the right pieces, it's always been looked at as an investment and as an asset class and digital real estate to the group that know it best. But when you think about like directions.com, it's this domain that was registered in 1995. And it's really, you know, one of the first 25,000 that were ever registered. It was literally created and the equivalent of minted, the way we think about it now, was like birthed during the same time that, like, you know, before eBay, before Google, before PayPal. And it just has a ton of individual hits on a monthly basis. If you take all those sort of tangible, sort of real elements, put those in a list, and then match that up with, you know, a Michael Jordan rookie card, and you see those bullet points that say it's one of X, it's from this era, it kind of has similar dynamics. I think people are way more willing to understand that the dynamics of a URL are not dramatically different than the same dynamics in the other asset classes and intangible asset classes.
Yeah. Well, so I want to ask some more reflection questions in a bit, but just because we're here at directions.com, I mean, pretty awesome. Like, so it seems like the way that people would make money is obviously, you know, gets bid up in trading and all that. But basically someone wants directions.com, they come and they do the classic kind of like buyout offer. I know you have to be careful with financial advice, but I just don't even know like what a multiple on a website would get. Like it's just such a weird, like, how do you look at comps for that? Like, am I hoping for a, you know, is this something that could 3X? Like, I just have no idea. How do you start looking
at it? Yeah, and again, it's never investment advice, but I can speak to the fact that this particular website is one that has like that provenance of a really early website, but it's also one that, you know, it has, I believe it's 820,000 exact Google searches per month. And then it's like a little over 16 million broad searches per month. And then you think about a destination like that and the potential revenue stream that comes from leasing domain names to a third party. And a lot of the stuff that happens now with other domains is certainly open as a possibility for dividends and kind of ongoing revenue streams for investors in this particular asset. So wherever this goes, wherever that space goes for us, we look at it as a really important sort of destination when it comes to rally, no pun intended, but it's also one that has that intangible value and the potential for something that works beyond just the initial investment, which is something that we're working through at some point soon.
I'm just not going to let you like slightly open that dividend door, you know, without kind of open that a little bit more. I mean, well, so is that something that could be sooner than later coming to rally, whether through this or through other assets being like income generating, you know, ability coming from these assets?
Yeah. I mean, this isn't something dramatically new. I think anyone who's known us, we've talked about it a bit in the past.
I think we talked about it on our first one. Yeah.
So that's how you know how it's a long time coming. I think we always want to create this world where, you know, we're finding assets that are important right now and relevant right now, but will be relevant in the future. And nothing is really, you know, more relevant than having some new opportunity come from an asset you've already invested in. I think that we've always thought about it that way. There's a lot of assets on rally right now, which potentially open that opportunity. If it creates better experience, it's something that our investors want as part of the investment opportunity. It's always something we're looking into.
What was like a moment that in this last year, you guys were like, oh shoot, we need to pivot into this direction. Like we got that wrong pivot. Was there something like big that kind of popped up in that way?
There were a couple. I mean, there's never been a time where we kind of deviated from roadmap dramatically. I think one of the things that we've always thought about, and a pretty crazy moment came when we released this collaboration of these a little over 700 cards with Pixel Hall of Fame, who is this really sort of great designer who's worked with a lot of big brands and does these incredible sort of 8 and 16-bit portraits of athletes and historical figures. And we put this set of cards out, and it literally almost broke our Shopify page. Like the whole set sold out in something, some crazy under 60 seconds. And there were thousands of people on the wait list trying to get in. And then we started seeing them pop up on eBay in this crazy sort of secondary market moment where you're seeing things go for 5X and 6X and 10X. And people are really creating a community around this particular set of cards. That for us has always been part of the plan too. The idea that we have these great assets and we've always kind of tried to let the brand lead and distribution's always been like one of our biggest strengths. I think that we have this huge user base, and this great user base, and this great community who's always open to seeing more than just the investments that are available in app on weekdays at noon and what's happening in the secondary market. That was the first one. That was the first aha moment. And I think that, you know, we saw so much more demand than we anticipated, but we also saw people who had great ideas about what we should be doing in the future with some of these product launches. So if we can bring attention to the platform through some of these ancillary pieces that match up with these assets, it's something that we know is going to work in the future and that we know people want. So that was one. I think the second more obvious one was for us, you know, we took a while to sort of put together the perfect structure for what we thought the secondary market on Rally should be and would be. I think that with the launch of this new, more continuous secondary market, we see so much opportunity to keep building on this. And we see so much sort of so much more activity on the platform. We see so many more people asking the right questions and being a part of the feature development process of the product and doing more of that with our users and ensuring that their feedback is a part of the way we develop from the ground up has been a learning moment for myself, for the rest of the product team. But it's also been a good way to sort of think about what our roadmap should and will look like for the secondary market specifically. And I think that seeing that activity and getting just the amount of feedback and the CS tickets that come in, the customer service tickets that come in now with feature suggestions has probably quadrupled since before the new secondary market launch. So that's like the, those have all been learning moments that I think we anticipated happening, but it's one that to see it in real time is always a more interesting part of the product building process.
Well, and you have to love, as you know, chief product officer, seeing the refreshed app. You know, I love the trading view on the app when you're looking through and everything, and it's fun to see like all the action that's happening at once. You had to love that redesign. What are some of those product, what are some product features that come through that you're like, oh wow, that could be an awesome thing to adopt?
Yeah, a lot of it has been around sort of the a method of sort of creating counter offers and having more activity for individual users and personalization in that secondary market and during that bid ask process. Mm-hmm. We've had a ton of suggestions around what pre-market and post-market could look like. We've had a lot of people speaking sort of, you know, having sort of votes and conversation early with what they want to see on platform, what they want to have come to the secondary market sooner than other pieces. And I think that is really, a lot of it's about engagement, but in such a way that even on weekends when market hours are closed, people want to be sort of in the app, learning more, doing more, and being a part of the process. And I think that we've started thinking about, we started thinking a lot about what happens to trade, to assets that are trading outside of just trading hours. And there's a lot of optionality around that and a ton of great feedback about what we could be doing. So we're starting to do way more around like the individual focus groups and really having that conversation in a more formalized way and making sure that those voices are a part of how we build the pieces around secondary, especially outside of market hours.
Yeah, that's awesome. And maybe for people that don't know, could you just explain? So like before, obviously there was no secondary market, what it went to, where it's at now, and then like, yeah, maybe where you see it going.
Yeah. So long story short, it was when we first started, the initial offering was kind of like the status of an individual asset that made the most sense and was the easiest way to explain what an investment on Rally was. After the first year and a half of the asset being live in 2018, we launched what would become the first real sort of liquid secondary market around alternative assets at retail. And that was more of an auction model. So once every anywhere between 30 and 90 days, an asset would open and we'd do sort of one clearing price at the end of the day that got the most buyers and sellers in at one price. They'd have to confirm that they still wanted to buy or sell those assets and those shares. Yeah. And then it would be represented in portfolio. So then in November, we launched something that's more continuous. That looks a lot like what people would expect from the way they trade. And that's true bid ask. It reprices based on what those bids and asks do. You could buy one share, you could buy 100 shares, you could try and buy the whole asset out by putting a big block on the bid. And that happens between 10:30 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. Eastern on all non-holiday weekdays. And then there's post-only trading that allows you to sort of place bids and asks in anticipation of market hours 24 hours a day. So the goal has always been long-term to move towards a more continuous market. Whether that'll ever be 24 hours or whether it sort of takes on some of the dynamics of a crypto market, right now we're trying to build with the experience of the user in mind, and we're trying to do it in such a way that's responsible and not just dumping a million assets on the market and hoping for the best. We really want to build and design this with the end user in mind, knowing that for us, the goal is full liquidity. The way we get there and the method in which we get there, we want to let be dictated by our users and by the best interests of those users.
24/7 would be absolutely nuts when like, I'm imagining like you're tracking a hair, like that would almost, I'm selfishly for Alton, wow, the content we could make following a Heritage auction. Like, but imagine, you know, this auction's closing, you know, where the price goes, it's like, is it high, low? And all of a sudden this thing's like adjusting in real time. That could be crazy if something like that was to actually happen.
It's not, you know what it is? It's not something people don't understand. It's obviously these assets are a little bit different than crypto or any token or real sort of tokens that are trading wildly elsewhere. For us, though, the way we've always seen is that the last, what's happened in the last 2 years or 3 years is so much different than what happened in the 30 years that preceded it in terms of the way alternative assets are looked at. So now what we see, and we talk about this a lot internally, is that all these assets, the things you see on Rally, and I'm talking about, you know, first edition literature or a bottle of wine or a Birkin bag or a baseball card or any of these things, they're really overrepresented in conversation. Everybody follows the money and sees the auction results. Everybody kind of sees that news article, sends it to a friend. It's all over every group chat when something happens, but it's underrepresented in portfolios still. That's starting to change a little bit. So the more that it kind of gets into people's thinking as a true asset class, as opposed to just this really interesting sort of data point or news article, the more likely that true liquidity comes not just from the conversation, but comes from trading all those individual assets. And we feel like we were early to it, but it's happening so fast now. To say that these will never trade 24/7 or it'll never be something that's represented the same way crypto is, it's hard to say that now because there's so much interest around it that hasn't gotten the on-ramp yet.
Right. Are you guys still seeing like user growth, you know, growing at the same pace that maybe it was like earlier in the pandemic, obviously? I mean, numbers are relative as like your base gets larger, but is that still something that, you know, because it's easy sometimes on the Twitter scene to like see the same people and maybe things like that, but are you still seeing that user base grow quite a bit?
It's growing right now more than it ever has in the past. And that could be spoken for between new investors, top of funnel users. Everything is moving in a direction right now that we always anticipated it would. And we see that anytime we add a new unlock, whether it's the new trading system or new asset classes, we see more interest come from brand new groups. I think we've always had this cohort that you see on Twitter and you see in these conversations. And, you know, we all know the group that's been the best to us, and they've led so many of the conversations, and they're people I talk to all the time. But they have really well-formed opinions on what we should be doing with our platform, but they're diversified across every asset class too a lot of the times. Yep. When we do something new, and whether it's trading or new asset class, we see new whole groups come in. So instead of just being what I think it was early on when we started in 2016, 2017, and we were car focused, then added a few cards and then started diversifying slowly, I think now when we launch a domain name or a new NFT, or we launch some sort of new product, whether it's an ancillary product like the baseball cards that we did, or it's something that's a tag along that goes with the asset, we see whole new groups coming into the app. So we're getting growth in a way that it's not just, you know, tell a friend or two. Now it's here's 100 new people from this one Discord, or here's 1,000 new people that came from this one funnel, and they're finding their way to rally and telling others. So that's the dramatic growth that we've seen over 2021.
Wow. Yeah, super cool. And it's just that top of funnel. They come in and then they see all these other assets and it's just like, phew.
Yeah, they have something to find now too. I think that's what we've seen with NFTs too. Again, like the second investment from an NFT user isn't necessarily NFTs.
Yeah.
They're finding their way to things that they probably didn't even know existed on Rally. They came in for the Bored Ape and they stuck around because there were three or four other assets that they liked too.
Yeah. You guys are getting, I mean, you post on Twitter some of the office developments that you guys have had. It seems like you're in a new space or something like that right now. And it looks like that museum is finally coming to life where you can actually go and see some of these assets. What's going on with that?
Yeah, so we right now we're in the process of moving to a bigger space, which is our new headquarters and a new museum retail space on Broadway, still in Soho. But right now, I guess nobody could see it, but you see me in the back in a retail room right now, just surrounded by like t-shirts and merch and stuff like that, because the office has gotten a little bit crowded. I think that, you know, the view that we have on, and we've always had on collectibles as an investment class, and really, you know, the reason why we started Rally is because collectibles and prices around them, again, are part of every conversation. Everybody kind of wants in, but like anything else, like you hit a bunch of roadblocks, and it's frustrating when you put it to the side at a certain point. We want to create this space where you can come in and have a conversation with us, with other people, stick around, create a museum that's not stuffy. We had the small version of it here on Lafayette Street at our current office. And now we found a much bigger space, five times the size. And it's got, you know, great sort of foot traffic in the middle of Broadway. It's on this block that has some of the most important stores in New York. And it's also something where we can house, you know, a couple of cars, bunch of assets, throw a dinosaur in there, but create this world that I think me as a 10-year-old would have loved to kind of gone to the museum and seen all these pieces and really understand the mix of, you know, the past, the present, and the future. And we're trying to set up a space that has everything from NFTs all the way to, you know, T206 owner's Wagner card in the same space, because they have so many of those shared dynamics, and we can kind of teach everybody about what these individual assets mean in one setting. So that'll hopefully... We're targeting end of Q1, early Q2, but we're trying to do it right. So we're going through the design process right now, making sure that we have all the right pieces. And then we'll do something where it's more of a big on events and rotating displays, and do something that really brings the community together in one space.
Yeah. End of Q1, early Q2, that you guys are moving fast.
we're trying. There's no other option, right? You know what I mean? Like, if you don't, history is that crazy thing. If you fight it, it leaves you behind. We got to move as quickly as possible.
So a lot of times I find that, you know, people have like these pull out their hair moments where, you know, especially as like a founder of a company, you're like, if only people understood this, like, gosh, guys, relax this. For you, like, if you were addressing the haters, right? Like, what is that pull out your hair thing that you're just like, guys, this is what it's all about, blank, or you're wrong, blank?
That's a good question. So for me, I think emotion is something that is a crazy thing that influences everybody. And it's really unavoidable. It's human nature to kind of over-index an entire space when you really like something. Like, an example would be modern basketball cards. It's like this idea that I like basketball, I like cards. You know, I want to get the Zion-based prism, and I'm sure these are going to go up in value always because it's something I love and everyone I know talks about it. And then similarly, when you don't like something, you don't collect something, it's easy to sort of under-index it and say, you know, well, I don't like luxury items, so I consider Birkin bags to be not an investment. That's just a nice thing. It's not for me. There's no way this bag is worth $100,000 or whatever. I think that's the one thing. When I see that, which is always, it's everywhere. It's all over Twitter, and it's always in the conversation about specific things. I think the one thing that I want everybody to do, and I try and do more myself, is not have that narrow scope to making decisions and say, well, everyone I know does blank. I think that's been the biggest sort of the hurdle that we have with the regular retail investor, who's the most important person to us, is sometimes when something's a little bit different than what you're used to, or you have a pre-made opinion on what it actually is and what it means, it's very easy to dismiss it. I'm personally trying to be, you know, way less dismissive about something new. And I think NFTs have proven and will continue to prove that a lot of people will be wrong. It's okay to be wrong, is I think the biggest thing that I'm trying to do better for myself, for us as a business, for the product. I'm trying to instill that in the conversations I have with the user base and with the community around us. That's a, you know, being definitive about saying no is very destructive to long-term growth in any way, shape, or form for a business, for a person, for relationships. I think that's one of those things that I see those times when it's like, ah, this remark and this comment about Rally is, or this asset is so incorrect, but I can't jump into this conversation because legally it's not a good idea for me to do it. But also, who am I to say that your opinion is wrong? All I can say is that being less dismissive and really doing a little bit of that research about what those dynamics mean for an individual asset will go a long way for us, for everyone around it, for the whole community, for alternative investing in general.
Yeah. And I feel like you guys approach things with such a good spirit that it's annoying when people maybe are so passionate about things like that. And you're just like, hey, just... Do you think we have like ill intent here? Like, do you think we're that dumb? Like, just relax.
I mean, when it gets to a point, you know, I'll be honest though, it gets to this point, like, we're a pretty big platform at this point. This is not to take shots at anybody else in the space, but we have a dramatically larger user base and bigger volume than anyone else in this space that we get compared to on a regular basis. By numbers alone, you're going to get a lot of detractors. You get people that are really excited about what you do. You get people that are less excited about what you do. They all have a voice. It can all be some sort of noise, or you can put the filters up and say, these are the opinions I should listen to and do a little more research on. The problem with alternative assets and with investments and collectibles in general is that when it happens super quick. There's an inflection point where it'll leave you behind if you're not doing the right research or you're not paying attention to it. I think we just saw it kind of with, not to get too in the weeds, but with this Patek Philippe watch with the Tiffany face, which is this $6 million watch that was all over, you know, a couple of weeks ago, giant auction result, which was just a $55,000 watch the day before. A lot of people dismissed that specific model, this 5711 Nautilus. But what happened was, by the time that auction was over, that's no longer for people to own. That's a collectible. That's an asset class now. Like, that model will never be available to regular people from here on out. I am positive that it's officially lost for real collectors. It's now an asset class. It's an investor piece only. It's discontinued and every piece is spoken for. You'll never be able to walk into a store now and buy one off the shelf ever again. But that happened in such a hurry now. It did that jump from being this piece that was looked at and people were looking at it the other way saying, I can't imagine that's going to be more than 100,000 or 200,000. Now, all of a sudden, the floor is 6 million. It's hard to sort of make up that gap if you were dismissive the whole time. And I see that happen a lot. And I'm trying to avoid that myself as best I possibly can in the future, because really, we live in this world now where anything is possible, whether it comes to prices, things being considered asset classes. It happens in a hurry. So being more accepting to what that could be is always an important part of what we do.
Okay. Two more questions. One, I hold the right to ask you more than two, but
Absolutely.
Just always, people are always curious, like, what are you personally loving to collect right now? Just things you're interested in. If you're scrolling eBay or something, buying for a personal collection, what are things you're interested in?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a lot of what I try and not have the things that are on Rally, and most of the time, I don't have any of the stuff that's legitimate collector grade on Rally right now. I have versions sometimes, but I don't really sell anything. So when I buy stuff, I don't sell anything, period. When I buy stuff, I'm buying it because I really love it and I like it and I want to have it, knowing that there's a good chance I'm never going to see money back on it. So my collecting tastes are remarkably eclectic, and even like my NFTs, if you look at like my wallets are all in my name, so you can see them really, really easily. It's frantic. It looks like it's all over the place, but it's just things that I look at that I connect with on a regular basis. So like the last couple things I bought, I'm not deep in like the sealed VHS space, but I did buy a bunch of sealed random VHSs from the early 90s to send to friends as Christmas gifts, because to them a lot of what we do makes no sense. So I'm trying to like slowly get them involved in things, and that they remember. So they're like ridiculous movies that no one even cares about from when we were younger that they all got in the mail around the holidays.
They're like, Rob, that was one. What is this? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, why'd you get me the movie Bookies from 1996 and in a sealed 9.6? What does this mean? It's stuff like that. But the other side of that is that like art for me is something that I'm super close to, and I try. It's something that's the hardest asset class from a retail perspective to invest in. And you have kind of the masterworks of the world and a few people who are trying to change that as best they can right now. And it's very hard, that structure, to get into the gallery structure and buy the right pieces. What would be considered the right pieces is very tough for me. Like, I've always kind of looked at art and bought the things that I love. And that was always when I got like my first check from work. It was always put it into art and things that I care about. So for me, I'm trying to pay as much attention as possible to the spaces outside of what I see every single day, and trying to put sort of more of my money there, knowing that I'm not looking for returns. I'm just buying things that I really love and care about. But that being said, I also have an apartment. I have like an office in my apartment that's just full of stuff that my girlfriend wants to burn and throw out the window at this point. So I have to sort of decouple myself from some of this stuff soon.
Yeah, if you've been in the space long enough, all of us have this room that's like, nope, these are the untouchable. The room. You can't go in there, you know.
I was having this conversation with someone last week, with Lexo Hanning, actually last week, who's been super supportive of us and of the whole space. And I was telling him, like, I'm running out of space. He's like, you just can't tell your girlfriend. Like, that's the you didn't make a mistake by having it. You made a mistake by telling her about it. And that's what I realized was my problem.
I don't know, dude. He's got Serena drinking the Kool-Aid. I mean, she like posts like an NFT thing and like did the whole like GM the other morning, was like,
yeah, morning, seriously. You know? Honestly, you got to follow the smart people in the space. He's definitely one of them. If he's able to get superstar athletes into the space by just having it all be around, I guess maybe I could do it at some point too.
Okay, I'm cashing in my right to ask you another one.
Of course,
I'm curious on like your take, and you might have to be careful with this, some of this stuff, but on like the sealed video game conspiracies and or sealed, you know, VHSs, all this kind of stuff. It seems like there's a lot of noise. Is that a lot of noise? Like, do you have any takes on this that you can talk about?
I mean, I think it is noise, and video games is, again, a space that it's no sort of it's no secret. Like, it's close to my heart in a way that I have collected video games even really early on, and I've always sort of had like the two or three pieces that are really important to me, the same way I have with cards and with anything else in this space. But it's also one that is so relatively new to so many people. I think that you get that fear of something that's new and unknown. If you get it from somebody who has a big enough voice to distribute content in such a way that paints a picture, if you have some sort of bias already towards it, it's easy to lean on that and say that, you know, that's fact, that opinion is fact.
Yeah.
With anything, I think, you know, there's going to be the same sort of cast of characters. You'll have a grading company. You'll have the community that was there early and really cares about it. You'll have sort of people on the outside looking in saying, I don't get it. And you'll have people that are like, oh, that's genius. I completely get it. Why did I miss this one? Yeah. With video games, you had that dynamic all sort of compressed into like this 3-month window. I think that when we sold our Mario, it was looked at really quickly as like, whoa, this is happening so fast. But for anybody that's been in this space and tracking it for 2 or 3 or 4 years, and even longer in a lot of these cases, I'm relatively, me like buying my first sealed game maybe 2.5, 3 years ago is late to the game compared to so many people who've helped me along the way and have given me sort of research points. To anybody who was coming in new, it was really easy to look at something like that sale and say this happened really fast. Hmm. But when you dig in a little bit, you realize that, again, the characters around it, the Wadas of the world and the heritage auctions and the people who have really been at the forefront of it, they've been there early too. things just move quicker now. So you're not going to see the same situation where cards from 1909 are just starting to get attention now and see these crazy returns. You're going to see it in newer asset classes like games, like VHS. And if, you know, history moves really fast and it leaves you behind if you don't catch up with it, if you're not at least forming an opinion around it, then you're on the outside. So all that polarization is almost a good thing. It's a net positive in my mind, especially when everything is above board, which I do believe it to be. In all of these spaces, you'll find outliers, but the video game space just happened to move really, really quickly at a time when people are really open to new alternative asset classes.
Well, the lesson I'm learning today from Rob is, hey, you just got to have a balanced response, humility. People are just people. You know, it's all good.
They're all right. That's the problem. Everybody's right. Like, you know, the problem is that also this year, like, risk tolerance replaced research. So it's like, if you're 21, you're ready to spend some money, the opportunities to get like bad stuff is as prevalent as it is good stuff. So you got to really do the research from the ground up.
Yep. Okay. My last question for you. And this is just a personal one. I'm biased. I just want to know, if you weren't doing Rally right now, what would you be spending your time on? What career-wise would you be pouring all of this Rob Petrozzo passion into?
Man, I don't know. It's hard to say, but if you gave me $1 billion tomorrow, I'm not going to want to be a designer and not want to create from scratch. I think that, to me, if I could sit in a room somewhere and just draw pictures all day, that would be the dream. I have a feeling I accidentally would have put out a generative PFP project with 10,000 memes of some sort as an NFT, because it feels like there's no choice. But as a creator in general, as a designer, but I can't imagine a situation where I wouldn't want to pick up a pen and a pad and be like designing or drawing something. Even if it meant $0, I'd be doing that. So,
I mean, so if you had $1 million to start a new company tomorrow, you'd probably focus on an NFT project.
There's a couple things I've been thinking about. I think that, not to get too abstract, but I think my generation, when you think about people in their mid 30s and late 30s and early 40s, and they're starting to sort of, you know, get a little bit older and you start thinking about things a little bit differently, I think that a world for that group who's going to be 60 years old and 70 years old, and maybe the dynamics are a little bit different from a generational perspective. They're not going to have 20 kids and they're not going to stay in the same town over a course of a lifetime. They're trying to make new connections. I think there's going to be a world that's way more interconnected, and that those people aren't going to just like go to like retire to a 65 and over home and like hang out there with their little crew. I think making something that's more physical and links it to digital for that generation is something I think about a lot.
Okay. See, there you go. Oh, okay. That's like,
that was absurdly abstract. That was like that wasn't my intention to end there, but I appreciate the question.
Dude, that's exactly what I was curious to hear. Like, I think that's, people are going to hear that and be like, wait, I wanted to talk about that for another 20 minutes. What do you mean? But,
my friends don't. I talk about it nonstop and my friends are sick of hearing it. So I'm glad somebody would maybe want to.
I mean, you don't have to go deeper into it, but I think people would be curious on what business ideas Rob Petrozzo spins at night.
It's not that different from Rally, but it's also one that is probably more of a passion project than a business ever, but we'll see.